8:14 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, prior to their meeting in Colville tomorrow at 2:15, the Summit County Council will first gather at noon at the new Summit County Services Building for a dedication and ribbon-cutting event. In the studio with a preview of the agenda, I have County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. And I get to follow the moose story. Great.
How about that? What would you do with a moose in the house?
I have no idea. Probably the same thing they did.
So, as I mentioned, County Council going to a ribbon cutting for the South Summit building. In retrospect, anything, Tom, we could have done or that we maybe should do in the future to avoid something like this happening again?
Well, I think one of the things probably internally that I could have done personally is get a little bit more personally involved with understanding where the contractor was on schedule, the architect and the contract on schedule, probably in the late fall of last year. I didn't get involved until the November, December time frame, and then we really started to really put the pressure on the contractor. In comparison, the contractor that's working on our facilities at the fairgrounds is doing a fabulous job and is right on time. And I've been keeping track of that a lot closer this time. So, you know, it's probably a situation that we could have understood a little bit better how they were ordering materials, because that seems to have been one of the areas of concern. So, you know, you learn from these things. And, you know, at the end of the day, we didn't spend any extra money in order to finish this building. And it stayed on budget. It's turned out to be a wonderful facility. I still don't have any complaints about the quality of the work that has been done. It's just the timing that has been very difficult.
Did the contractor lose some money on it, though?
I believe they have. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Council will also discuss the development Lincoln Station, just up Bittner Road from the fire station. This is the rezone for a 4-acre parcel, asking for 78 multifamily with 5,000 square feet of commercial. Council's being asked if this project passes the code section 2.3, whether or not it has a compelling countervailing reason to create a new entitlement. So does the staff have a recommendation?
I believe the staff has recommended that this, of course, there's no decision being made at this meeting, so there's not an official recommendation in this packet. But you know, as they were putting this in front of the Planning Commission, they were certainly recommending that a positive recommendation from the Planning Commission go forward, mainly because there's 31 affordable units associated with the total of 79. So that's over three times the amount that they would be required to do the 20% requirement in our code. And then there's other amenities that they're going to include, transit connections, e-bike station, other amenities that would be included in that community benefit. So we'll see how the discussion goes this Wednesday with the council.
Yeah. As you mentioned, the Planning Commission did recommend yes. Commissioner Ryan Dickey, however, dissented. He was concerned that whatever affordable housing you get may be used by the 5,000 square feet of commercial. So is that a consideration?
Well, one thing I noted in the packet is that the Planning Commission forwarded their recommendation with some conditions, but also some recommendations to the council to look at. And one of them was to see if they could convert that 5,000 of commercial into affordable units. So I'm expecting that there'll be a little discussion about that. I'll see what the staff recommends along the way.
All right. So if not, I mean, what was the commercial supposed to be for?
You know, I didn't get into the detail on that one. As you'll have to ask Pat that question.
Okay. Council scheduled to approve the bond of up to $19.5 million. This is for the Olympic improvements, like the athlete housing at Bear Hollow, a zip line tour, improvements at this Kern speed skating oval. Any issues with this?
No issues so far. It looks like in looking through the packet that our financial advisor is advising the county to move forward with this. Again, there's no impact to the county on this. This is simply a conduit bond to the Utah Olympic Foundation.
Yeah, and again, remind us what the funding financing mechanism is that allows Summit County to underwrite improvements in Salt Lake County.
Yeah, so because most of the funding is being expended in Summit County, this is the way it works. And then we had to have a separate agreement in order to do that, and that was signed earlier in the year to allow this to happen.
All right, a discussion and possible adoption of a resolution to authorize the filing of a cross appeal in the 2018 Pacific Corps centrally assessed matter. Are they assessing just 1 year, or is this multi-years?
We do these appeals 1 year at a time, unfortunately. So we just we're in a kind of almost like a class action appeal on these centrally assessed properties. So we're joining other counties that are dealing with Pacific Corps. That's the whole theory of centrally assessed, is that all of these things go across county lines. But the 2015 appeal has just been settled and favorably to the counties. So now we have to get into the process for 2016 and 2017. So that's what these are working on.
So what are we talking about in terms of taxable value?
It's a large number. I mean, it seems to me that I read somewhere in the $900 million range of assessed value in Summit County. So it's not something that we take lightly when the centrally assessed properties ask the tax commission to lower their rates. So it does have a big effect on not only Summit County, but all of our taxing entities. And really, probably the larger effect is on our school districts.
A proclamation from Mary Ann Trussell. She's resigned as Summit County Recorder. Her position will be on November's ballot. So what's the procedure to set up interim replacement?
So interim replacement, it's a couple of ways. It could either just default to the current deputy. That could be the case, or the party can forward a name that the council considers. The attorney's office has that. You know, because of the timing of this, there was actually a rather intricate way that some of these scenarios can play out. And then one of those things was that it causes an election to be forwarded for this year.
So a deputy would probably just be the less. I mean, just the easiest, huh?
It could be the easiest from the standpoint of keeping business going. But you know, the parties have considerations in these matters, and you got to follow state law. So,
and what about soliciting candidates then for the ballot in November?
So that's the party's responsibilities. I don't get into that, they will follow the procedure in state law.
Okay, and this election is just for a 2-year term to fill her unexpired term?
That is correct.
All right. The restaurant tax recommendations back on the agenda. Do you anticipate that the council will discuss funding for Park City 4th of July and maybe others that got turned down?
So in meeting with some council members in the committee last week, at the end of the day, where that group got to was that, the integrity of the process is probably very important in this way. Bringing any kind of there are actual appeal processes available within the ordinance, we'd like to see this play out. However, given the nature of some of the comments that were made along the way when we first brought out the recommendations, I believe the council will talk about it.
Okay. That appeal process, that would have required Park City Municipal to file a formal appeal?
Anybody that either... You know, I don't know why you would necessarily appeal the amount that you get received if you were awarded, but certainly somebody that wasn't awarded, they could appeal. But there are very specific criteria for that, and I can't speak intelligently about that this morning. But there are, in our ordinance, there are certain reasons that you can appeal.
All right. So given that you're kind of not following that appeal process, you say that the council will go ahead and discuss.
Well, there's no appeal process yet because there's been no decision. You have to make a decision before something can be appealed.
Okay. So the discussion will happen before the decision.
That's correct.
All right. So if the council should find some money for Park City, does that mean it gets taken from another recipient?
Yes. In fact, that's the case. So if within the ordinance, it's perfectly in the council's purview to adjust. I mean, the committee is a recommending body for the grant amounts. So the council has the ability to change those recommendations. It's just it changes the process if that happens.
All right. A resolution for a locally preferred alternative for State Road 224. Summit County agrees that it makes sense to put these BRT lanes on the outside of 224.
Well, actually, what we're saying is that if the council adopts this resolution, they're saying that they accept the results of the report, mm-hmm. and it allows the environmental process to move to its next step. One of the reasons this is being brought up at this time is that the Summit County, Park City, and some other and UDOT are jointly applying for quite a large grant from the BUILD program, which is run by the Federal Transit Administration and the USDOT. That application will go in the middle of July. It's for $25 million in order to implement the results of that study and where that next steps of environmental and eventually design go to. So we had to have this resolution in place accepting that plan in order to include it in the grant application.
Can you talk a little bit about that, how this impacts the adding these lanes would impact the biker and walkers there along the trails? I mean, would they still be separated?
They still would be separated. I can't tell you exactly how much they would be separated by. But there are places where we will have to acquire right-of-way in order to accomplish what we've got. We've got quite a bit of right-of-way out there already on most of 224. But there are some places that are a little bit pinched in that regard. And then recall, we also have the center lane already, the entire length of 224, that can be utilized as well. So, you know, a lot of these details in an alternatives analysis are very high level. So they're looking at the entire width, not exactly the details within that width.
Now, is this part of the Mountain Accord planning process?
Yes. So the Mountain Accord and then the Central Wasatch Commission funded this alternatives analysis.
All right. The staff report estimates the cost, I guess, to implement this at $62 million. You say we're applying for a $25 million grant. If we get that, we're down to $37 million. Where do we get the money?
Yeah, so you know, the transportation and transit taxes that were adopted in 2016 could help support that, but there will be other grants that will be needed along the way in order to make this happen. A lot of the changes to the Park City side of BRT, if that project is implemented, probably will fall under other granting opportunities. For instance, just the change of having a transit center in the Bonanza Park area would be a change. And so we would apply for other grants for that as well.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about that, because we'll have a discussion about whether we set up the one or two possible new transit taxes. We're talking about 0.25% and 0.25%.
That's correct.
Okay. The staff report says that in talking to various groups, you have heard, I guess, against it, there's tax fatigue, but in favor of that the tax would be relatively benign, mostly falling on visitors. And in that case, one idea is to kind of just put off the decision till the very last minute to see what other counties sign on. Now that we've got that lawsuit filed challenging Salt Lake County's entrance, does that change the dynamics here?
You know, I was listening to your story on the way in, and I have read about the challenge in Salt Lake County, or the possible challenge. There actually isn't anything filed yet. You know, that would be specifically for Salt Lake County. I don't know it would affect Summit County, because it's dealing with an intricacy on how Sandy either supported it or didn't support it. You know, it really is up to the county councils across the state to implement or not implement this tax. So, you know, the reason, the method that we're using to garner what the public attitude is, the elected official attitude and other groups that deal with these taxes, is to try and get as many conversations with them as possible.
Yeah, so you'll be before the Park City Council today.
That's
doing
correct.
That. And then I know you've met with other groups across the county.
We've met with all of our cities. as of yesterday, besides Park City. So Park City will be today. Lodging Association, Historic Downtown Alliance, all just everything that we could possibly fit in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, what are you hearing?
You know, like the report says, it's a mix. Of the cities on the east side, we had Colville last night that we took a straw poll, and they were not for it. However, the other communities have, nobody's excited about it. Nobody's excited about paying more taxes, but they understand that we probably need this revenue. They get part of this revenue after the first year. So I don't know that it's necessarily overwhelming support, but it's not saying let's definitely not do it.
Okay. And again, it doesn't matter what they say. It's a county council
decision.
Well,
but it does matter what they say. We are a community here, and the council does care what the community thinks. And that's why we've been trying to get as much input back to the council as we can, and why they had the conversation at their Council of Governments meeting last week.
Okay. Wanted to ask, did Councilmember Chris Robinson make it to the conference at the White House?
He did, and I have all I know is that he had a couple of conversations with council members from other counties in Utah about a couple of subjects that we're interested in. I don't know how that conference went.
Okay. So he apparently was there on other business anyway?
No, he went specifically for this. He paid for it himself, and he wanted to go. And so he got to commiserate with some of his fellow Utah and Idaho commissioners and council members. And I'm sure he'll report on it on the meeting tomorrow.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just be careful with fireworks and fire this 4th of July. We'll have some folks in next week to talk about that, but I'm very concerned about that considering what's happened in the county already this year.
Okay, Tom, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, the Park City Planning Commission meets tomorrow mostly to deal with plat amendments as well as a look at a conditional use permit to allow construction of a new single-family structure on a steep slope located at 89 King Road. In the studio, I have Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Pretty routine agenda items, all of them in Old Town. The one at 227 Main Street, this is to combine two existing lots into one. The applicant wants to do what?
227 Main is the Star Hotel. And they're right in the middle of their historic district design review process, and they've got to clean up the lot lines from the original Park City plat.
Okay.
So this is just the plat amendment for them.
All right. So the decision was made that they can't demolish the building. They need to work with what they've got, those Spanish archways.
It is a landmark structure, and they're right in the middle of the design process. It looks like the back of the building probably is too far gone, and the roof is too far gone. So everything from about 50% of the wall forward will be restored. All the Spanish arches, the doorway, the way the steps work, we need to work through some ADA issues on that, but it'll come back looking nice.
Yeah. So when was the Spanish facade put up?
That's part of the ongoing discussion. I'd have to ask Planner Gran exactly what's going on there. There were two remodels with the Spanish architecture. One was from the original architecture, and then the second one was redone in the 1970s.
All right. Let's talk about some other off-agenda items. The Kimball Garage Special Event Space, this came back to the Planning Commission at the last meeting, and that was after about a year delay. Not much had really changed other than what a noise study had been completed, so what now?
Okay, so what now is the Planning Commission was fairly specific in their recommendations. They asked the city engineer to take a third-party look at the applicant's submitted traffic information. There was no real traffic study submitted for this project. The previous city engineer indicated that it had been event space previously and that this event space was smaller, and therefore the traffic impacts would be no change. We're going to evaluate that. We're particularly evaluating load-in and load-out and how the trucks and buses arrive. We need to make absolutely sure that transit can make the corner on Park and Heber. That's mission critical for us, and emergency services into Old Town is mission critical for us. So We're looking at additional mitigation strategies. The Planning Commission also directed the city to have a third-party noise consultant review the noise consultant work that the applicant submitted and make sure that everything that they're proposing will be effective in maintaining both the neighborhood compatibility and the ability to operate under the conditional use permit.
So you say that the engineer had found that this is a smaller event space than what the predecessor, the Kimball Arts Center itself?
Yeah, Kimball Arts Center once or twice a year used to have a couple 600 people in it for big events, and this event space is on the order of 400, so the previous city engineer made that determination.
Yeah, did we have buses coming up and dropping people off?
We had limos and all that kind of thing. The
like
parking,
the Sundance?
Yes.
Yeah.
So this Heber Avenue's been redone with this consideration, and the new sidewalk's been installed with the ability to put a motor coach or equipment unloading on Heber Avenue and still maintain two lanes of traffic.
The Planning Commission had originally approved this. Were they missing some information when that recommendation was made?
Well, it went to City Council for approval on appeal. It was remanded back to Planning Commission. The Planning Commission really didn't miss anything. Other than I think some precision and detail in the way the conditions of approval were worded and make sure that we had really crossed our I's and dotted our T's. This is a very important corner. It sits very close to historic homes and a historic neighborhood. It's a second floor deck with not much in between it and the residences, which makes it a little bit different than the others. So we're just trying to make sure.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. The Sky Lodge also has a rooftop event space. Has the city had any complaints with that?
None that I'm aware of. They wouldn't come to me unless they were pretty major.
Yeah. And again, that is, I don't know if it's the same size or not, but it's certainly not as close to the historic homes.
Right, right. No, this is going to be one of the larger, and it is what they call, it's not an indoor event space like Park City Live, Harry O's. This is a private activity space, and it's entirely possible that, you know, you're going to see weddings in the space. We got some information from the applicant. You're going to see corporate meetings in there. I think we're a little bit concerned about how it will operate during Sundance and the Arts Festival and World Cup, and the applicant's looking at that right now.
Let's talk a little bit about outdoor lighting. I was in Round Valley for the solstice, and instead of this beautiful, serene landscape, it was just kind of blighted by a home that had those ice-cold colored LED lights just everywhere. I mean, and I'm glad I don't have to look at that every night, but when are outdoor lights okay and when do they become a nuisance?
Truthfully, Leslie, outdoor lighting is only allowed in really minor incidences. You may not light up your house for architectural reasons, which this house is doing. You can only downlight with LEDs in your landscaping. Uplighting is not normally permitted. The difficulty is code enforcement on this one. And just the actual enforcement of the regulations. And it's completely complaint-based, and the City Council needs to make a policy decision whether they're going to enforce on these. We've got some serious, serious issues in the Historic District as well, where people have installed floodlights on automatic timers that go on all night long. We've got a couple incidences where houses and condominiums are just lighting up the front of their facade all night long and causing glare. So Community Development Director Laurent and I are really looking hard at what to do about these things. But basically, outdoor lighting per se is not allowed. There's some caveats to that.
So to put it on the city's radar then, a neighbor would have to make a complaint?
No, I think you just did. So we'll get a look at that during Big Stars, Bright Nights. Maybe I'll take a trip up in the Round Valley. But for the most part, that type of lighting is not allowed.
All right. And any news on the Art and Culture District?
A couple things. We saw the other day that the Kimball had selected a new architect. Community Development Director Laurent and Nate Rockwood, the budget director, are beginning conversations again with the city's consultant for the master planning. It had kind of gotten slowed down while Kimball kind of selected their architect and got a program going. It's ramping back up again now. Ann is meeting with our consultants. We had a conversation the other day with the transportation planning folks, Alfred Knotts and Julia Collins, about what to do about Munchkin and how Munchkin can work. So it's starting to move forward.
Yeah. So the Kimball, again, has announced that it's hiring Bjarke Ingels, the original
right.
architect they had for the proposed building at the corner of Heber and Main. So if they just brought back those plans as they were presented several years ago, would that be allowed in this new Arts and Culture District?
Not at this point.
Because?
Right now they're outside the height restrictions.
What are the height restrictions in that area?
Right now, I believe it's in the general commercial zone. I think it's 35 feet.
Okay, which is about three stories?
Right, about three stories.
Yeah. So when do you expect to see something from the city, since the city is basically the developer of this, yeah?
The city is the master developer, and then the sub-developers will be potentially Sundance and Kimball and whatever else we decide to do in this. I kind of expect third quarter, September, October, by the time we start to see some things coming back.
Yeah. And at this point, I think we only have memorandums of understanding with the Kimball and Sundance?
Yes, that's correct.
So at what point does a development agreement need to be signed or need to look for a new tenant if they're not committing?
Well, I think there's a couple things that have to happen. It's got to move through the regulatory process before we can get hard commitments from everybody. They got to understand what the city wants from them. We have to understand what they're asking for, go through the master plan development process, understand the design guidelines and the architectural controls on the district. The planning department is very cautious about back-of-the-house services and making sure that this district functions correctly, not just the front of the house, but the back of the house.
Okay. Bruce, anything else you want to mention?
No, thank you. Okay. I appreciate the information. And
okay. See you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Well, this summer's outdoor film series by the Sundance Institute kicks off Thursday in the studio with details and a rundown of the summer screenings. I have Sundance Institute CFO and Managing Director Betsy Wallace, along with the new Assistant Director of Utah Community Programs, Larlee Ownby. Good morning.
Good morning.
So maybe just introduce yourself, Larlee. You've just started with the Sundance Institute?
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here. I started in January, right in the middle of the festival, but done a lot of work with community programs down in Salt Lake and kind of throughout the state, so excited to be working with Sundance Institute. Oh,
yeah, so you're familiar with the screenings then?
Uh-huh, yeah. I've always had a chance to come to Summer Film Series as a participant, so it's really exciting to be able to kind of be on the back end and see all the fun stuff that goes on behind the scenes.
Okay, so as I mentioned, kicking off Thursday, actually, I guess it kicked off last weekend with the Latino Art Festival.
Uh-huh. Yep. We had our first screening with Latino Arts Festival and showed Dolores, but we're really excited. We have Brigsby Bear coming up this Thursday down in Salt Lake.
Okay. So how many screenings do we have total?
We're doing 11 screenings this year, and it's super exciting. We've really expanded our lineup. So we're doing screenings in Salt Lake and Park City like we've done in the past, but we also have a screening out in Camas this year, as well as up in Ogden. And new this year, we're doing a screening down in St. George. So really doing statewide.
Okay. And how do you decide what gets played where?
Yeah, so kind of to select the films in general, I work with our festival programming team, as well as the different collaborators that we're working with for different specific screenings, and kind of come up with things that are audience favorites, but kind of fit with the theme that we're working with on our collaborators. And then once we do that, we kind of reach out to filmmakers and contact them to see if they can join us. So we're really excited for Brigsby Bear this Thursday, as well as our screening of Believer in July. And our screening for Won't You Be My Neighbor in August, we all have filmmakers coming.
Oh, okay. For all three of those?
Mm-hmm.
Are those all in Salt Lake?
Two are in Salt Lake and one's down in St. George.
Okay. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the ones that are going to be in Park City. And I guess I asked how you decide what gets screened where, because I recall Man on Wire actually screening in Park City. I think it was done through the film series.
Yeah, that's great. For specific cities, we kind of looking at with our partners that we're collaborating with and kind of decide what makes sense. So for Man on Wire, you mentioned that one, we're working with Park City Recreation. So for that screening, they'll be available before to do some slacklining in the park. So we kind of look at our collaborators and look what films we have and kind of see what fits the best with the different audiences that we have.
Okay, so that's Friday, July 6th. What else do you have lined up for Park City?
In August, we're doing a screening of Red Dog True Blue. So that's a family-friendly film, but we're also inviting everyone to bring their pets along. And we think it'll be a really fun screening with that facet, but we're also working with Nuzzles & Co. And they'll be accepting donations at the screening, but they'll also be having a puppy play area and like adoption center. So I think it'll be a really fun Park City event. And it's after the Kimball Arts Festival as well.
All right. And then the one in Camas is going to be one of the, film festival favorites, I think, from 2015?
Uh-huh. Yep. So that's me and Earl on The Dying Girl. So we're really excited to be working with DeJoria again on that one. And then Mountain Town Music is also doing a concert beforehand. So lots of good stuff going on.
So will that be inside or will that
It'll be outdoors.
Outdoor mm-hmm. where we have the High Star Ranch. I'm trying to think
yes,
of the Recycle
area.
Utah.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. They have the
area.
Harvest Festival. That's what I'm trying to think mm-hmm. of. Okay. So, and then do you want to talk a little bit about some of the other statewide screenings then, Betsy?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. This is our 21st year of the series, and we're really excited about the group of films that Laura Lee and our collaborators have been picking. And really getting down to St. George for the first time is... I think we're also excited about expanding and being able to do that. So the films are really, we're trying to focus on films that are from Utah, been filmed in Utah, and trying to get to the point where our artists see the wonderful scenery in our audiences and enjoying the state of Utah and how beautiful it is. And it really is a great annual event for us to spread out this year a little bit more than we have in the past. And I think next year we're going to try to even be farther reaching as we decide where we need to go and where we want to go. You know, last year we had about 6,000 people participate in our free screenings. And for us, that's just lovely. We're so excited about those kind of numbers and to be able to share what the films are about and share our artists. So it's great.
Yeah. So would you, if you added more places, would you add more films, more than the 11 screenings?
I think we may. You know, we've got to see how this 11 goes this year. We want to make sure that attendance stays up relatively high for us. You know, it is free, and so that the costs are borne by the Institute, and we just want to make sure that people are enjoying it and that we're promoting it the right way so that we get the people to our screenings. So with Laura Lee on, we're excited about having her tenure and experience to help us out. So it should be a good summer.
All right. Do we get good turnouts here at Park City? To ensure that it's going to come back?
Yeah. We do. We have great turnouts at Park City. You know, this is my home, to be honest. And every time I go and see a movie here, I'm thrilled to see how many people come in and support us. And that's so important. We really appreciate it.
All right. Screenings don't start until dusk, which is after 9 usually, just because of the long days. So it's like, what, after 11 when you finish?
Yeah, it's pretty late. It really is. You know, it sounds so much fun when you're going to a movie in the evening. It does start late and it does get out late. And so that is something that's a little bit tricky for us. But we appreciate everybody's patience. We try to do fun things. And we just mentioned having the dogs and puppies at our Park City screening. And we try to figure out little ways to engage people early in the afternoon or early in the evening. And Laura Lee's done a wonderful job getting us ready for that. So
gates open at 7:30. Seating's first come, first serve. You ask that you use either blankets or those low chairs that are symphony standards, I suppose.
Yep, exactly.
And then what happens between 7:30 and the time the film starts?
So that depends on the film. So as we mentioned, like for Man on Wire, Park City Rec will be doing slacklining. So just depending on the theme, we select different activities to go beforehand that match with that.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention? I guess what we should mention is that people get a choice to vote on the final screen. That'll be in Salt Lake Wednesday, August 29th at Red Butte Garden, but people have a say.
Yeah, so that's our community choice screening. So for that, just like you said, everyone has a chance to vote to see what that film is. So when we were selecting that film, we kind of looked at audience favorites from festivals past, and then we usually select a theme. So this year we wanted to highlight films that have been supported by the Institute so that they've either received grant funding from us or participated in one of our labs down in Sundance. So we have 5 festival favorites from that we're really excited for one of them to be shared with audience based on what they choose.
Do you have those in front of you? What are they?
Let's see. I don't have them in front of me. Let's see if I can remember. There's Patty Cakes is one of the options. Bottle Rocket. Whiplash is another one. And 2 others that I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't think I see it right here either, though.
You should be able to go online and see them. But, you know, we really would love for people to vote and be part of the way that we program during the summer. So it would be fantastic if people came out or went online and voted.
Okay, so you'll announce that sometime in August then? Is that where voting goes through? All right. And then, of course, Betsy, I got to ask you, you've got the Ray Theater. I mean, we could have we could have matinees, but you're not doing that yet.
Yeah, you know, the way that Ray Theater came together, and it's a fantastic theater, and it was a great collaboration between the Institute and the city getting that done so quickly, is that we had to go through a special events permit. And so for us to be able to go outside that parameter, we have to get individual permits with the city, and hopefully over time we'll come back to the city and try to get a broader permit that allows us to do more things. But right now we don't have that.
Okay. You'll be back in a couple of weeks with that economic impact results study. When do you expect that?
That should be in a couple of weeks at the latest. We're really excited about announcing our numbers. You know, it's it really does validate how important the arts are, arts and culture are to the state of Utah, and how driven from an economic position the arts are, and we're excited to be part of it. So we should be here shortly.
Okay, sundance.org if people want more information. Hey, Laura Lee and Betsy, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History are hosting an upcoming gourmet hike to the historic Little Bill Orban. In the studio with details, I have Park City Museum Director Sandra Morrison along with one of the organizers, Sally Elliott. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So when and where is this happening?
Thursday.
This Thursday.
Which is why we just are so grateful to you for letting us talk about it for a minute. You've got one more hour to get online to parkcityhistory.org. And over on the right-hand side, there's a sign-up for the Little Bell History Hike. Breakfast is being donated by...
Lunch.
Lunch is being donated by Deer Valley... I'm thinking it starts at 9:30. That's almost breakfast for me.
Yeah. So we need to get the count to Deer Valley so we have enough food for everybody. So, yeah, go online, parkcityhistory.org. And, we're going to hike out the Little Bell. We have two hosts. We have two Park City Museum historians and volunteers. We're going to spend this morning actually digging out historic photographs from the archives to take reproductions with us. So we'll be talking a lot of history on the way out there. The contractor and the structural engineer are meeting us on site at the Little Bell to talk about all the stabilization efforts that they're working on, and then we'll have lunch.
Okay, so this is in Silver Lake area?
So starting at Silver Lake, yes.
Starting at Silver Lake.
But we have about an hour and a half of hiking. We're going to talk about the Wabash and the New York and the Bonanza and the Ontario, and it's a huge mining district for Park City. In fact, the Ontario, one of Park City's biggest producers, we'll go right by that, and that was the one that was owned by George Hearst, the father of William Randolph, and that's where he made his first million.
Yeah. So you're meeting where then?
So actually sign up online and you'll find out.
Okay.
So we need people to RSVP. If you just show up on the spot, we won't have any food for you and we'll feel bad. Yeah.
So RSVP on the line and then you'll get an automatic reply telling you where to meet, and lunch is going to be yummy. So we'll be hiking and dining from about 9:30 to 1 o'clock. Parking at Silver Lake and leaving from there. There's some really exciting stories about all the mines that were up there.
It's a fundraiser, so, I mean, that's the whole goal is to raise money.
$75 per person or $140 for a couple.
Yeah, and 100% of the proceeds go towards the stabilization of the Little Bell. There's no overhead involved in this at all. Everybody's giving their time and efforts and...
So I know where the Little Bell condos are. So where are you walking to?
The Little Bell Orban is on Bandana Run. As you're heading down that beginner run to Empire Lodge from the top of Silver Lake, it's on Bandana Run. It's all that remains of what was once a really very large mining complex. And then around the corner on the hill is probably a compressor or some big heavy old piece of steel from the Quincy mine. But there was so much around there, the Lucky Bill, the Quincy, the Daily West. The Putnam Group had been the Quincy. Just right. Lots of exciting, very rich ore around there.
So where are you on the stabilization efforts?
Moving as fast as we can move. Of course, our contractor can only get so much work done each year, and he has other things that he needs to be doing at other times of the year. We have almost completed the California Comstock. We have absolutely completed the King Con counterweight. We're starting, and this is the first mine we've done at Deer Valley, the Little Bell. And we're going to begin to talk about the Daily West as soon as we get some other things in progress. That's the head frame that fell over several years ago.
And it's still there.
And it's still there like a dead cockroach.
All right.
We're going to put it back up, though.
Okay.
Eventually. And then it takes is money and time.
And then later this summer, the contract is moving up to the Jupiter Orbin. That's the Orbin that's tucked under the rocky outcroppings up in Jupiter Bowl, which probably a lot of people have never seen.
Just below the Ohm Zone, you've seen it.
Yeah, it's back in there. And getting the plans together, as Sally said, for the Thanes and the counterweight there. So a lot going on this summer.
So what did Orbins do?
So, you know, the problem in Park City is we get 350 inches or more of snow every year, and up in Jupiter we would have got a lot more than that. Mining you can do year-round. It's the same 45 degrees whether it's summer or winter, and so the problem is how do you get the ore off the mountain, you know, in the winter, especially if you're just using a wagon and a horse. So the ore bin you would stockpile the good stuff, the valuable stuff, until the roads cleared and you could get the wagon up there. And of course, using gravity, so it would have a chute at the bottom that you could open, and ore is very heavy, and so gravity, it would flow onto the wagon, and off went the horse and wagon down to the railroad.
So in terms of the stabilization, I mean, what are you doing to the bins themselves?
Well, the bins are rotten at the bottom, and a lot of the old wood has been damaged through the years. So we have stockpiled a bunch of old wood from the mines, and Clark is reusing some of the old beams and old woods as much as he can so it matches and it looks more authentic. But some of the wood is just eaten away and rotten, so we just have to shore it up. When he did the King Con counterweight, he actually poured concrete footings to rest it on.
Yeah.
With the California Comstock, he redid a lot of the old masonry. So, you know, there's a lot of underneath the structure kind of things that need to be done.
Okay. You have until 10 o'clock?
Yeah. 1 hour and 2 minutes.
Okay. Sally, Sandra, thank you.
Thank you.